All right, everyone, sit down and shut up. This lecture is going to be a little different. I'm Mr. Tex, this is Tex Talks Battletech, and this time around, rather than tell a story about a mech, I'm going to tell a story about a ship. A slice of its history, its importance, and in the end, its ultimate demise. This story, like so many others, starts somewhere in the middle. And to provide as much context as I can, there may be a tangent or two. By the end, I will tie these threads together, so worry not. The tale this time around is a periphery folklore story. The periphery being the periphery, well, you have to take these stories with a grain of salt. I mean, deep space has long held enough rumor and hearsay to fill many volumes of written work. And spacers are, well, by and large, traveling vagabonds prone to drinking their pay and telling extremely tall tales. That being said, the full story goes like this. Once upon a time in the late 30th century, the Torian Concordat found an ancient, derelict, Star League-era warship floating seemingly abandoned in deep space. The vessel in question was a Black Lion-class battlecruiser. At 802,000 tons mass, and boasting enough advanced weaponry that even the clans themselves would later claim them as flagships post-Exodus, the Black Lion class was an enormously powerful weapons platform for any who had ambitions of galactic force projection. Untouched save for the ravages of time, it was a unique and truly awesome engine of war waiting for any who could claim it. Something this powerful was obviously a fundamental force multiplier for regional political balance, as it was indeed a true relic of humanity's golden age, and naturally a unique opportunity for any power block of the era. And yet, on the verge of its recovery by the Torians, mysteriously, from nowhere, unknown forces arrived to annihilate it completely before disappearing just as suddenly as they had arrived. Unlike some other periphery stories and folklore, this story is entirely grounded in truth. What information I have suggests its destruction was rooted in the cold, hard calculations of an organization keen on maintaining the balance of power. This entire series of events encompasses what will later be called the Trippets Affair. The story of the SLS Trippets is not a simple one. And to fully understand why it was first abandoned in deep space, and then lost to time, and lastly destroyed, we have to dive into history. For once upon a time, warships were fairly common. Once upon a time, they defined warfare in the Inner Sphere. But, as with all things in the Inner Sphere, things eventually trend toward betrayal, tears, and misery. As you no doubt have gathered, warships are, well, were a very big deal. From the beginning of humanity's push outward, there were warships. When humanity fought, the first line was warships. When humanity invaded, it was spearheaded by warships. Every blockade, every major battle, every war, big and small, involved the simple arithmetic of how many warships you had, and how could you counter the enemy's fleet. Before the fall of Star League, war planning's often first and only consideration was where was the fleet and how soon could it move. Each and every house, each and every nation-state, each and every two-bit warlord either bought, built, operated, stole, or dreamed of warships. Because force projection simply was impossible without them. Notice I said was. We shall get to that. So why were warships so important? Why were they so significant? Well, let's say you're a neo-feudal society with an enormously wealthy ruling class, and some of your people get a bit uppity because you rely upon their hard labor to keep your economy moving. Nothing says get back to work like casually glassing a city or two. Nothing at all has that awesome, righteous display of awe-inspiring power that a warship does. And as for warfighting capabilities, nothing held a candle to warships. They were fully FTL-capable vessels, meaning they didn't have to rely on jump ships to be ferried to and from conflict zones. They could just suddenly, and very inconveniently, show up to ruin your territorial ambitions. As for force projection, potential larger warships could and often did carry full fighter wings, transports, and sufficient ground forces to ruin just about anyone's day. With a second-to-none communications and control system, a warship could effectively direct and, through its weapons, support a planetary invasion. It is no exaggeration to say that warships are what first enabled rapid, efficient warfighting, decisive tactical campaigning, absolutely effective counterinsurgency support, and served as the linchpin of every great house's power structure and arsenal. It can be argued that without warships, the Great Houses would not be the size they are today, as they could not have conquered and then defended their holdings. Warships were power projection. Warships were the absolute maximal force brought into any conflict. They silenced rebellion by mere presence. They were often the first to fight, and the last to leave. Again, past tense. We'll get to that. You have to understand that building warships was the dreadnought rush of its time. Everyone made them. Hegemony and how shipyards turned them out alongside jump ships, as they were ultimately just another business product in that golden era. Every time the periphery threatened insurrection, the SLDF made warships and authorized an ever-expanding naval budget for peacekeeping purposes. Even great houses and periphery powers were keen to lay hands on what was the greatest weapon of its time. But, if history has taught us anything, it's that arms races generally don't end well. After the Ameris coup, and the civil war which followed in its wake, the bulk of the remnant SLDF committed itself to an exodus under the leadership of General Kerensky. With them, they took 1,349 jump ships and 402 warships, intent on leaving the Inner Sphere and the impending succession wars far, far behind. After the horrendous losses inflicted on the SLDF by the Ameris Civil War campaign, this was but a fractional remnant of Starleague's defensive force. However, it must be noted that for the record, each of the great houses also had their own militaries, and often those militaries were, in some part, patterned off the SLDF in terms of equipment, its use, and doctrine. As Kerensky had feared, some of the SLDF had elected to join house militaries or sell their services and become roving mercenaries. All of this awe-inspiring firepower, coupled with ambitious house leadership and the dangerous power vacuum in the wake of Starleague's collapse, resulted in a series of wars truly apocalyptic in scale. The secession wars were fought without much, if any, restraint. Among all the other numerous casualties, by the Second Secession War, warships were thought to be completely extinct. One by one, they were destroyed in the great battles of that era. One by one, they were consumed in the fires of war through aggressive campaigns, poor maintenance, lack of spares, lack of repair facilities, and eventual lack of functional working knowledge on their systems of operation. Yes, in the end, the fires of war had even claimed knowledge as a victim. Their last major presence in the Inner Sphere was the Battle of Hesperus II, wherein they were thought to be lost. Each and every one, through direct action, were embarrassingly catastrophic FTL malfunctions. You have to understand that during the Secession Wars, the technology base suffered horribly. Each house was keen to conquer what they could and destroy what they couldn't keep. Entire planets were razed. Entire populations were deleted. Generations of research and development were destroyed by enemies trying to deny their opponents any advantage. This was, to the best of their abilities, the Great House's attempt at total supremacy. This was accomplished through a robust application of total war theory, and over the course of secession wars, humanity lost the ability to continue their ancestors' work, and in many cases they struggled to barely maintain it. By the end of the secession wars, the Inner Sphere was a graveyard on a scale known only to the gods. It is no wonder that the Inner Sphere lost much more than peace. They'd ruined nearly every major technological advance they had made. Through their territorial ambitions and avarice, the great houses of the Inner Sphere had burned everything they inherited for the dream of controlling it all. Sadly, as it turns out, when all the rules of war go out the window, it's quite possible to bomb people into the Stone Age. The loss of technology from this universal campaign of indiscriminate warfighting had other effects. The loss of warships meant that campaigning became a tedious, difficult venture. Houses had to now muster forces without the protection or force projection capabilities that warships afforded. Houses had to heavily garrison their worlds to prevent losing territory and resources to piracy, insurrection, revolt, or border skirmishing. Houses had to play careful defensive games, making war a slow, deliberate exercise in comparison to the blitzkrieg efforts of yesteryear. The great houses were reduced to a simmering cold war that occasionally flared into conflict before settling into a slog and then an eventual, if uneasy, peace. The slow nature of this conflict taught all the great houses to be wary of ambitious ventures, aggressive posturing, and going all in on any one strategy. Through this backslide into a more primitive technology base, a precarious balance was maintained. No longer did the great houses have the power to make unilateral war against their neighbors, or control substantially more territory than they already had. The loss in technology kept them more or less in check. To gamble on ambitious conquest could result in calamity, and so all sides learned to play the great game, making moves carefully. Disinformation, propaganda, and careful allocation of forces became the standard. Wars were now over a dozen systems, not hundreds. The secession wars had strangely made the great houses closer to equals than ever before. And you have to understand, there are some people who are very interested in maintaining that delicate balance at any cost for their personal benefit alone. So, walk with me a moment here. A moment into crazy land. Here's the thing. We're going to have to acknowledge at this moment that the Inner Sphere has two histories. Two parallel histories. There is, of course, the official history, which most everyone knows an interpretation of. Each and every citizen of the Sphere and periphery alike has their own view of history, which makes their government look great and others look bad, and so on. Then there's the shadow history. This is the ultimate what really happened account of events, and is more or less an endless chain of shadow wars, grand conspiracies, assassinations, proxy battles, spies, lies, meddling, and madness. All moves in the great game of galactic politics is in the shadow history. So, put on your tinfoil hats now, boys and girls. We're gonna open the pages of the crazy book and delve into what really happened with the Trippets affair. The whole story, not just the folklore. So firstly, we have to talk about how Comstar is more or less the root and cause of many problems in the Inner Sphere. Comstar controls all communication in the Inner Sphere, period. Comstar controls all banking, being that the C-bill everyone is paid in is backed by Comstar's communication services. Everyone takes C-bills, because H-bills or house bills are largely tied to how sane their government is at the time, and considering that the answer to that question is usually between almost and never, C-bills are always the more attractive option. By the way, before you ask, the current exchange rate from a single C-bill to modern US dollars is between 8 and 10 bucks to the C-bill. In case any of you nuts want to say, but the numbers for a mech cost isn't high enough. Yes, yes it is, because that number is in space bucks or C-bills. Tangent aside, let's get down to the hard facts. Who owns the actual monetary unit of exchange and facilitates its use throughout all commerce? Comstar, who runs the Mercenary Review Board, which is the only reasonable and reliable way to hire mercenaries, rate their services, and ensure you don't get ripped off. Comstar, who listens to all communications traffic and probably reads every message. Comstar, what about reports of unexplained phenomena, especially those which target technological discoveries or rediscoveries? Comstar, what about reports of people, mostly scientists and free thinkers, disappearing for no good reason, often after announcing they made a breakthrough? Comstar, what about reports of people dying suddenly of very completely natural diseases that were totally undiagnosed up to that point? Comstar, because, well, Comstar sees all, does all. Find the clans before they found us? Well, Comstar also did that. Kind of. That's a complex one. I'll save that gem for another day, but boy, did they screw up. I'll be honest, they're kind of to blame for the clan invasion and, as a matter of fact, the way things played out. But just remember, when in doubt, Comstar did it. And before people start to scream tangent, let's stitch this back into the fabric of the main narrative. Who do you suppose maintains a hidden, massive stockpile of weapons from humanity's golden age and ensures no one else can rival the primacy or upset the balance of power to the inner sphere? A stockpile so massive it contains a small fleet of very active warships, to include battleships capable of eradicating entire civilizations in an afternoon of idle button pushing. Well, Comstar. And you see, in 2979, Comstar had a big problem. By 2979, as you now know, most warships were officially considered extinct. All data suggests that they were wrecked, gone, lost, missing, or rendered so crippled as to be completely ineffective. All known examples were rendered into fleets in being or totally ineffective and inoperative. By 2979, Comstar was beginning to relax because after endless indecisive conflict, none of the great houses really had the power to wreck each other significantly further. Sure, they could always load up a bunch of their precious jump ships with dropships galore and invade a planet, but without warships, or rather, without the ability to totally control a battle space with a warship, the blitzkrieg of yesteryear, the glassing of planets, the massive excesses of violence from the collapse of Starleague were finally dying down. By 2979, warfare had turned into a series of endless border skirmishes, petty wars over planets rather than whole sectors, as no one was willing to risk further damage to dwindling examples of what was, in many cases, irreplaceable technology. Under these conditions, the status quo was maintainable, so long as the great houses maintained parity and balance. Balance further maintained by Comstar when someone did something they shouldn't, like try to rediscover lost technology or form overly ambitious plans. Balance was easy to maintain so long as none of the great houses achieved any form of lasting advantage. And in 2979, that balance was threatened significantly. In 2979, the Torian Concordat had found the SLS Trippets. Something that could potentially change everything. Abandoned and adrift, and mostly intact, was the SLS Trippets, a Black Lion-class battlecruiser from the Starleague Defense Force. How it got there, why it was there, no one knew for the longest time. But, again, thanks to Comstar, the story has even more layers. please indulge in a minor tangent here because I think you'll find this only adds to the narrative and mystery. Sometime after the events of this story, a Comstar operative going by the handle Damocles provided documents to an investigative reporter about a great number of interesting things, one of which being the complete recovered diary of Colonel Hanni Schmidt, who was the last commanding officer of the legendary Black Watch, an SLDF unit responsible for the protection and safeguarding of Star League's First Lord and his immediate family. In the pages of the diary, a story emerges from the dark days of Star League's collapse, detailing the supposed escape of one of the last members of House Cameron, fleeing the massacre at the Unity Palace. During this escape, the Colossus-class dropship SLS Abyss made emergency orbital rendezvous with a waiting warship on the dark side of the moon. And that warship was the SLS Trippets. It is suggested that this vessel carried the last of the currently presumed dead Cameron bloodline far, far, far away from the solar system. Far away from the cause and the chaos of the conflict. How it came to be abandoned, derelict, and forgotten so far from home is ultimately unknown. But there it was, free for the taking. While the Taurians did not care for its history, they knew its value. The Taurians had stumbled onto something huge and immediately made efforts to recover it at all costs. If the ship were to be recovered, if it were put back into service, this would be like letting the Bismarck loose in a world of ironclads. Needless to say, this would cause a significant imbalance, and this was not good for Comstar. Needless to say, if someone figured out how to reverse engineer even pieces of this vessel, the balance would be upset. Also, being that something this huge couldn't be kept under wraps, it was soon learned that the Capellan Confederation wanted to recover it for their own purposes, and well, as soon as any intelligence agency in the Inner Sphere knows anything, Comstar knows everything. As you may have gathered, other than controlling the money and having a second-to-none intelligence-gathering instrument, you may remember Comstar has firm control over all communication. So unless the Great Houses are willing to pony express all messages around their empire at all times, never enter it into any computer system at any time, and rely on memorized messages only, they're going to have to interact with Comstar in one way or another. Naturally, when Comstar found out about this ship, they decided that maybe it would be best if nobody got the Trippets. Comstar Primus Yin Takami immediately dispatched the first division of the Comstar Guards and Militia under strict orders that none should take the Trippets. Also, they were given strict orders that they should not, under any circumstances, allow themselves to be identified, and thus painted every piece of equipment they had stark white. Because I guess that's what you do when you're Comstar. Be weird. And, of course, sanitize assets for plausible deniability operations where they shouldn't be operating. Did I mention they started a technobabble religion? Robes and all. Wizard spacemen. Anyways, needless to say, when the Taurian recovery team suddenly found themselves to not be alone, naturally they were a bit startled. Nobody was supposed to know this ship was here. For someone to jump on top of them out of nowhere was a bit scary, to say the least. When the mysterious jump ship appeared without marking, signals, beacons, greetings, or explanation, the Taurians were unsettled. Naturally, the Taurian forces immediately sent forth four lances of their best aerospace fighters to intercept and identify the newcomers pouring from an unknown, unregistered, unidentified jump ship. Comstar's unknown forces annihilated them and proceeded to bomb and strafe the Trippets into a useless hulk, leaving it tumbling into a rapidly decaying orbit. Afterwards, the surviving Taurian recovery teams issued a statement indicating that the reason they had lost the super-secret, totally awesome Star League ship was because a bunch of unknown, completely white ships devoid of any insignia attacked from nowhere before returning to nowhere for no reason given in an attack that nobody claimed responsibility for. Naturally, this sort of explanation is the thing that starts legends and rumor. And so we have the foundation of one of the many Battletech legends. Most would later suggest this story was a corrupted retelling, based on half-truths or just plain old periphery folklore. Some surmised this was the cover story for a partial or total recovery of the Trippets. Others would suggest it wasn't unknowns but Capellans that struck the vessel. The story lives on as the Vandenberg White Wings, which as a tall tale sits on the shelf between the so-called Minnesota tribe and the disappearing battleship of Merope. All fine stories shrouded in the classified, hidden, or shadow history of 31st century combat. So that more or less ends this episode. I want to go over a few thank yous before we proceed to do whatever stupid we have cooked up for the credits, which some of you watch. Firstly, thank you for indulging my tangents. I think they were warranted this time and support the narrative in this sort of complex, layered history. Secondly, thanks to Sarna.net for being the best fan-driven wiki you will ever find. If you think Wikipedia is better, remember that midichlorians are canon. I'll just let that sink in. The reason someone's a big bad Sith or Jedi is because of bacteria, or whatever. Now that you're dead inside, let's move on. If you're interested in reading about the setting of Battletech, I'd recommend you go to Sarna. It's an awesome wiki. Lastly, I want to thank my fans, both new and the long term. You have a lot of choices in content in this day and age where we're oversaturated, to say the least. So thanks for watching this instead of, say, a top 10 list about the Imperium's worst taco stands or top Warhammer 40k hats. I want to do my best to not just read verbatim from a wiki or any other shortcuts. I want to actually do the research this setting deserves, and try not to show contempt for it or my audience. Thank you. I mean, there's worse stuff out there. Ugh. Sometimes I wish the internet wasn't real. And yeah, that should do it.
Oh, hey guys, I found the rope!
Oh, god.
A labor caste drone taking arms against a trueborn warrior?
Yes, this is a typewriter. Back in the 21st century, poorly educated social deviants known as hipsters used to compose banal, mediocre manuscripts upon these and use them as a crude, haptic interface for a then brain-draining technology known as an iPhone, while drinking purposefully cold coffee and or an IPA.
Wow, that sounds terrible. What's an IPA?
Well, imagine a beer that is exceptionally bitter and tastes exactly like farts.
Oh, how terrible. Why did they do that?
Well, you see, they wrote reviews about it and convinced each other that bad was good. They were also quite fond of decrying the excesses of capitalism, or using expensive electronics assembled in third world countries by slave labor, or smoking expensive cigarettes in public places, or warning about the threat pollution poses to an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how horrible.
Oh yes, truly a dark age. They were fairly easy to spot as they wore women's jeans, flannel, and glasses without lenses in them.
What mad people. What became of them?
They all perished beneath their multiple layers of unnecessary irony.
You and your wretched kind have come a long way to die. Your hubris will see you killed this day. Your machines and tactics are pathetic. I shall reave you from this place. I shall tear back your flesh and expose your quivering insides to the sky. For the glory of the clans, for honor's sake, in Kerensky's name, I shall have you. Oh, no.
Achtung, Achtung! Alle Einheiten, sofortiger Statusbericht.
Ich habe ja deinen Elementar aufgeklärt. Deine Kommunikation wurde soeben beendet. Hervorragende Aufklärung.
Für deine Leistung bei dieser Verdeckenoperation wirst du befordert.
Ich habe den Feind aufgeklärt. Er ist sehr überrascht. Außerdem steht er in Flammen. Ich fahre mit der Aufklärungsoperation fort. Gegenwehr ist minimal.
Exzellent! Deine Aufklärung ist beispielhaft.
Friedrich III hier. Ich kundschafte gerade in der Stadt, Sektor Bertha. Ich habe keine Bienen mehr im Cockpit, aber ich bin sehr beschäftigt. Es muss so viel ausgekundschaftet werden. Ich werde den ganzen Tag mit Erkundschaften zu tun haben.
Ich habe gerade das Kapitol aufgeklärt. Jetzt ist es ein Grab. Benötige Unterstützung zur Aufklärung des Raumhafens.
Das kann arrangiert werden!
Alright, instead of normal riffing on the credits, I'm gonna answer a few things here for those interested. The response to these has been overwhelming. I'm very humbled by it. The Battletech community, by and large, is very good people. Knowledgeable, as well. Very knowledgeable. I mean, there's a few salty salts who play MWO or Battletech as though score and ranking matters, or think that having fun is secondary to always winning. And as well the few people that get mad and that I have an actual opinion on things, but hell, in the end, I'm always going to be me. Anyways, I'll answer a few questions here. Yes, I do read the comments. I do. I also take the actual time to respond to as many as I can. What mech or whatever I will cover next, well, there's a lot of people who keep saying cover this or cover that in the comments. These people are, well, people who don't engage in the polls when I put them up, which I do. That's where people can vote on what they like. If you don't see those polls, well, that's YouTube hiding your notifications, or they turn them off, which they often do. Don't worry, though. You're not special in this case, as it's fairly common. I mean, on average, maybe 5 to 10% of my channel sees my content. Or maybe just my terrible engagement rate as a channel. Who knows? Either or, I do actually cover what people have asked, plus a few things I am very interested in talking about, so it'll be a mix going forward. I do get kind of mad when people act like they're engaging with their audience and then do whatever they want, often for a paid endorsement, so I actually do keep to the list the audience and I have assembled together. I tend to ignore people who shout out the same thing over and over again because I did work with my audience on the to-do list, and I want to respect that. However, I do fully expect people who don't listen to get mad because they're not voting in the polls provided. Hell, those people probably clicked out of the video 10 seconds in because it's not using hand puppets to explain why radiation is bad or Joan of Arc was a lady. Anyways, as for the next one, we're going to talk about this guy and all of the very bad choices that he made. He's to blame for a lot of stuff. A lot of the setting starts with his exceptionally poor decisions. Also, wow, I didn't even really swear in this episode. Holy sh!
Okay, we got another new fuck here. Seems to actually be able to follow instructions and figure out how the fuck to do it for once. That's a nice change. Okay, any opinions on this one?
Egads! They're reading now. This is most distressing.
I am a bear.
Ask them about what wine goes with good cheese. Let us see the measure of this man.
Does anyone have a quarter-inch muffler with half by 28 threads? I'm asking for a friend.
Ask them if they like iron brew. Find out if they like iron brew.
As a duly elected law enforcement entity, it is my duty to remind you that we must check each and every applicant for signs of communist brainwashing, communist subversion, or the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify each and every one of our precious bodily fluids.
I am a bear.
Sounds reasonable. Sometimes I wish the internet wasn't real.